Recorded.
Okay, we'll resume this afternoon's council session. Would you read the item, please?
Item 1117, amend the official zoning map, planning and zoning code, and transportation system plan to carry out Portland's 2035 comprehensive plan, establish a new community involvement program and committee, amend related codes, the 2035 comprehensive plan and plan map to coordinate policies and programs.
Okay, I've got some information and stuff for folks that are coming to testify. I'm going to save that until they're here and have Joe and Eric set the stage for us first of all.
Okay, this will be quick, commissioners. I'm Joe Zender, chief planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm here today with Eric Engstrom, who's principal planner and also the project manager for the entire comp plan package. So today we're bringing forward, you're going to hear testimony on a package of actions to implement the comprehensive plan policy document that you adopted in June. It includes zoning code changes, zoning map changes, transportation system plan updates, and community involvement program changes. Specifically, and these are in the binders that we provided for you earlier, we're going to be discussing changes on the maps showing zoning map amendments, and this includes changes to base zones, overlays, plan districts, and trails. So you'll hear some map testimony. There we will be addressing the recommended zone code changes, which are included in the report, new zoning code provisions and maps related to commercial and mixed-use properties, campus institutions, employment lands, a variety of changes to residential zoning designations, and open space-related zoning changes. Other relevant pieces of this are the Phase 2 Transportation System Plan report, which has got 16 sections. It's in your binder, but it includes the bike classification discussion. And finally, a public involvement program report and related code. These changes, as I said, implement the comp plan that you adopted in June. And to the extent that there is testimony about elements that a change today would imply that we need to go back and revisit a policy decision you've already made, we'll make sure that that's clear to you. So, thank you.
Okay. Eric?
Joe said it all.
Okay. All right. Well, then let me go over some logistics. And again, we'll get people in here gradually. Our apologies, folks, for the awkwardness of how we're proceeding today, but we literally were rudely interrupted in our work in this room, and now we have to exercise a little extra procedure for a while. I want to make sure people know about time limits and process. Obviously, people can testify in writing or through email or online with the MAP app, as they have all along, if for some reason you don't get everything in today or you have other points. We're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes just because of the number of people signed up and the amount of time we think we have a quorum this afternoon. If you're testifying about a section of the zoning code, please try to specify the section. That just gives us more context. Obviously, avoiding repetition of previous testimony is always helpful. We are scheduled to go until 5. I think we can probably last until 5:30 or 6 until we do finally lose a quorum. This is the first of two hearings. We'll be continuing this to 2 p.m. on October 13th, and we'll decide at some point next week exactly when the record will close, but we are now continuing to accept written testimony. We have a work session scheduled on October 25th to discuss the testimony and identify potential council amendments, and a hearing scheduled for November 17th to allow public comment on the amendments we propose. So obviously keep checking the council calendar to confirm dates, times, places. So with that, we've asked our Planning and Sustainability Commission Chair and Vice Chair, Kat Schultz and Chris Smith, to come first, and then we'll take testimony after that. Welcome very much. Overdoing it, volunteers. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Mayor Hills and commissioners. As you begin to consider testimony today, Chris and I would like to highlight a few things that the PSC emphasized in our recommendation on these early implementation measures. As you're well aware, there are several elements of this package, enough that over the past year, the PSC held 10 hearings and 12 work sessions to discuss these proposals. Our summary includes our recommendations and concerns regarding the changes that Joe just outlined. Bear with us. There's a lot to cover here. We'll try to keep it condensed, but we've got a lot to go over and share with you. So beginning with the mixed-use zones, The PSC voted unanimously on our final recommendations for the mixed-use zones, but there were a number of topics that we discussed that we'd like to briefly cover. Regarding commercial mixed-use base zones and FAR, floor area provisions, we are supportive of the proposed base zones and bonus zoning structure in the commercial mixed-use zones, but we are concerned about the viability and effectiveness of the bonus structure to provide additional floor area and height when the public benefits are provided. Specifically, we're concerned about the possible reductions in development capacity if the bonuses are not utilized. Inclusionary housing program is important, and since it's critical to maximizing the opportunity of developing housing units. And so that all ties together, and if we can't kind of figure out how to get that balance right, then we're afraid we'll miss some opportunities. We support the concept of providing bonus for affordable commercial space as well, but we're concerned about the lack of clarity that's currently tied with that regarding the administrative aspects of the program. And we look forward to participating in a follow-up process to further define the program. We generally support stepping buildings down to adjacent residential zones in order to minimize the scale and height impact to the neighbors. These are for the mixed-use buildings along the corridors. We support allowing flexibility in meeting building articulation, and we support providing an extra 5 feet of building height when the ground floor has high ceilings in order to create better commercial space and support sufficient height for mechanized parking stackers as an option. We did not support stepping buildings back along transit corridors due to the cost and the effect on development capacity and code complexity. With regards to low-rise commercial storefront, we received a lot of testimony against the CM1 zones, areas that are today consisting of 1- and 2-story commercial buildings. We recommended changing the zoning in all CM1 areas to CM2, except in 3 areas where there was strong community support for the CM1, which was Multnomah, Belmont, and Selwood. We are concerned about the cumulative effects of the cost of the development on some of the proposed zoning and transportation provisions, such as energy efficiency matters, building setbacks, TDM, and other items. We recognize that each of these together are kind of small impacts, but are concerned that the cumulative impact of these may be large enough to inhibit development in a time where housing is in short supply. Therefore, we have recommended an economic analysis to understand this cumulative effect on these proposed changes, along with the inclusionary zoning changes that are being proposed. Go ahead, Chris.
So one of the more interesting issues in mixed use was drive-throughs. As you know, the comp plan policy asked us to limit drive-throughs. We came at that from 3 different perspectives. The first was to get the location of the CE zone, which is the auto accommodating zone, right. And we chose to basically keep it out of centers and out of the inner ring neighborhoods. We did allow it to be right at the edge of a few centers, but we did not put CE zoning inside centers. As an offset, we did create some grandfathering provisions for existing drive-throughs that are in zones that don't otherwise accommodate drive-throughs. The second part of our consideration of drive-throughs was a question raised about whether the development types that typically accommodate drive-throughs are actually helpful for parts of our community that are trying to lift themselves up, principally East Portland. And as a result, we included a provision that effectively prohibits drive-throughs east of 80th Avenue. And you will hear support for that from Commissioner Baugh and from the East Portland Action Plan later today or next week. That also makes drive-throughs non-conforming uses in that area, so they don't enjoy the grandfathering benefits that we will have in the other parts of the city. And then the final consideration on drive-throughs was recognition that some businesses operate exclusively as a drive-through or for certain hours operate exclusively as a drive-through. And we put in a provision that basically does not allow those businesses to refuse service to someone who does not show up with an automobile. So if the only way to get to a business is through the drive-through, you have to find some way to accommodate pedestrians and people on bicycles.
Chris, can I just, on the drive-through question, if they're non-conforming, then aren't we in effect saying that for a certain period of time we want to discourage the owner from updating the site or making improvements, which may actually make them more attractive or create a better fit to the neighborhood?
Right. I think the argument of the folks who proposed that change for East Portland hope that those properties will redevelop into other uses that are more directly beneficial to the community.
for a period of time, we're saying that if it's an eyesore and someone wants to update it, that would not be allowed.
Correct. If it's a non-conforming use, if you're updating your building, you can't retain the drive-through. Right. So you have a choice of updating or keeping the drive-through or not updating.
What's the third option?
I'm not sure what you're hinting at, Commissioner.
Well,
the third option.
There's a camp that loves them. And wants Dutch Brothers coffee in every street corner. My 12-year-old included. And there's people that don't like them, the mayor included. And there's some maybe middle ground where we're not discouraging people from maintaining their property in a way that it enhances the community that they serve. So is there a third option that at least can be debated?
Well, I think in the rest of the city west of 80th Avenue, we've done that with a grandfathering clause. So Dutch Brothers can stay. It can continue to update their building. If they were to close it for 3 years in a row, they would lose the privilege. But as long as it's continuously operating, they would have that. The priority that was articulated in East Portland is to make land available for uses that are more directly beneficial to the community. And I think the strong proponents of that will testify and give you their logic on that. But the commission believed that was an important conversation for the council to have, so we forwarded it to you. Another provision of mixed use was TDM. TDM also shows up in the campus institutional zone. And implementation pieces are in the TSP. We believe TDM is very much a work in progress, but we're supportive of that progress continuing, and we included hooks in the zoning to require TDM in both of those zones. We also gave a general recommendation in support of the Title 17 language that would implement TDM, but recognize that it will continue to need to be developed. It will also intersect the Central City Plan that we're working on. And the last consideration of mixed-use zones is that we avoided revising the zoning in some of the areas near proposed transit corridors. As those corridors are becoming clearer, some of those areas may want to be looked at sooner since they won't be on a transit line. A perfect example is probably the corner of Powell and Chavez. That will not be part of Powell Division Transit Line, it would appear. So you may want to look at reviewing that zoning sooner than you would have otherwise. We did not because it was still under consideration for the transit corridor. Another major component of the comp plan implementation is the TSP, and this was our first opportunity to adopt the bicycle master plan classifications into the TSP. We did so, made some tweaks along the way, generally small changes to look at the network in local areas and make it more optimized. One major change we did look at was the 7th-9th corridor. I know you grappled with that during your consideration of the project list. We did make a change there. We made the policy statement that the major city bikeway should be on 7th rather than 9th, and there was heated testimony on both sides, but really breaking that down, the testimony for 7th supported the idea that if you look at the topography and the connectivity, it is the better corridor. The testimony in opposition was primarily that there's lots of cut-through traffic on 7th, and please don't move it deeper into the neighborhood. So we believe that the correct policy is to be on 7th. The devil in the details will be to do an implementation plan that actually takes that cut-through traffic and puts it back where it belongs rather than inflicting it on other other streets in the neighborhood. So that, there is a challenge there, but we believe it's one that PBOC can look at in the implementation project. You're likely to hear testimony about Hayden Island, a feature of the TSP and of the 2009 Hayden Island plan is a path around the edge of the island for pedestrian and bike access. There was testimony asking us to remove that, fearing that it would cause mobile home parks to be removed or condos to be torn down. Obviously, it doesn't do that. It's a feature that only applies if redevelopment occurs. We believe that it was important to keep that marker down for access to the water in the future, not knowing exactly what form that would take, but keeping the marker, there's a public interest in that. One interesting provision of that is that when that was examined in the 2009 Hayden Island plan, council opted to remove that path from the area around Hayden Bay. We put it back. So we have a path around the whole island, so you're likely to hear from the community about that again. And there were a few issues in the TSP that we thought needed more time for discussion, so we asked PBOT to include them in stage three of the TSP. As you know, the TSP is being done in stages, and those include looking at additional major city bikeways that would correspond with Metro's active transportation plan on some of our civic corridors, moving several major city bikeways that where development has sort of pointed in a different direction than it did in 2010. We have asked PBOT to look at policy around autonomous vehicles with a strong preference for the shared mobility model of autonomous vehicles, the robot taxi as opposed to the robot chauffeur, and the desire to limit the miles that vehicles travel around with no passengers in them. And finally, we asked PBOT to look at a work-at-home program, sort of as we don't quite call that a mode, but it's a way of helping reduce demand on our transportation system. We also looked at the residential open space zoning. Biggest part of that was simply aligning that zoning with other things that have happened, with the new comp plan designations, trying to make patterns of zoning that were inconsistent in an area more consistent, and in particular trying to match the designations from the 1980 comp plan, so in a number of areas going from R5 to R2.5, for example. One notable feature of that project was some selective downsizing in the David Douglas School District to help them with their school capacity problems, while still at the same time retaining the comp plan designations for future growth when they've got those overcrowding issues under control. We also looked at the community involvement program, and I will express a little bit of remorse that we changed the name from citizen involvement to community involvement. I support that change, but as an old neighborhood association leader, I have nostalgia for the proactive engagement with government that citizenship applies. Unfortunately, the word has also become associated with legal distinctions, and we clearly don't want to link it that way. Probably the biggest issue we faced in considering that was concern from neighborhood associations that we were downplaying their role, and we did increase the language around neighborhood associations to try and show that we still have great respect for them, but equally we know that to engage our whole community, we have to have other avenues, whether that's culturally specific or other vehicles for people to give government input, and we strongly supported that. We also appreciate that the community involvement program described is stronger than the current one, and that it is going to take both funding and effort to implement that effectively, and we hope you will support that on an ongoing basis. And then finally, there was the miscellaneous zones project, which had two components. One was an update of the public trails map, and I think we took a lot of input from the 40 Mile Loop Trust. We also had input from property owners who had preferences about how trails would cross their property. I think we generally have people happy about the trade-offs that were made there. The issue in that project that's getting a little bit of press right now is the 4-to-1 FAR map in the RH zone. So as background, the default FAR in the RH zone is 2-to-1, except where specific properties are mapped to a 4-to-1 FAR. We had to update that for a number of technical reasons as zones change. You know, properties were not in RH anymore, or some were added. But we also had testimony about the impact on historic districts. Irvington called it out first, and in the discussion draft phase, there were some accommodations made to help protect the Irvington Historic District. That led then in our hearing phase for both NWD and Goose Hollow to say, well, what about our historic districts? And we asked staff to look at that. Our recommendation was to remove a section of the Alphabet Historic District north of Gleason from the 4-to-1 map in the interest of protecting contributing properties in that area. We looked at Kings Hill, and the assessment was that the buildings there are of sufficient bulk that 4-to-1 FAR was not going to change the character of that neighborhood, so we did not make changes there. I think you are likely to hear from property owners in the Alphabet District because of the timing of our process. We got testimony essentially saying, you know, protect our historic district, certainly cognizant of the historic preservation policies that council added to or beefed up in your consideration of the comp plan after our recommendation. We want to be respectful of that. But since testimony was already over for us, individual property owners would not have heard of our decision or the issue until after we were done, essentially, and would have gotten their notice in preparation for your process. So I would say that you should probably listen closely to individual property owners in that district and, if necessary, make adjustments to the map for individual circumstances.
Back to Kat.
And why he said finally, that was only finally for Chris, unfortunately, guys. Well, I'll try to be brief as I can here. Next item would be employment zonings. So we confirmed the code changes that were proposed there with a few exceptions. One was to be consistent with metro allowances, we recommended allowing nature preserves in prime industrial overlays. And we supported removing various metro-owned submerged properties near Smith and Bybee Lakes from the overlay. Additionally, we supported a zone map change in the Giles Lake Industrial Area from industrial use, which is IG1, to EG1, to minimize the impacts of the adjacency to the mixed-use neighborhood to the south. But in doing so, we recognize the transportation impacts to the intersection at Northwest Vaughan need to be mitigated, and therefore we limited FAR on office use to 1-to-1. They can get a bonus by kind of putting money into a transportation fund to help kind of look at mitigating the impacts on that intersection. With regards to campus institution zoning, we recommended adopting two new base zones for campus and institutions to replace the conditional use master plans and impact mitigation plans. This was done with a 9-to-1 vote. And the reasoning for that was that there was a lot of testimony from both the sides of the campus and institutions, as well as the neighborhoods with regards to this item. As we were kind of working through issues, staff spent some time to try to understand what the campus and institutions' concerns were and to work through those, but we didn't have a chance to reach out to the neighborhood and make sure that they understood kind of how those changes were happening. So as Chris has mentioned, you may very well see in your process the neighborhood now reacting to our response to that. And those were all with regards to TDM. And in conclusion, we'd just like to note that these changes strive to ensure that we can accommodate and expect the expected housing and job growth in ways that advance our community goals. For more affordable housing, for more livable wage jobs, and to meet our climate action plans. So thank you for hearing us out.
Well, thank you both. We're at that 90% point, or wherever you want to peg it, where, you know, we've been working on this massive effort for a long time. These volunteers have put a lot of time in. You've raised a bunch of issues that I want to probe into further, but we've got a lot of people we want to hear from. So I'm going to torture you further and ask you to meet with me and Camille Trummer again in my office and go through some of these there, and obviously answer council members' questions now and later, please. But I want to schedule some more time with you so that I can come back to the council and say, okay, I've delved into some of these, for example, the bonuses issue that you raised right out of the gate. Obviously, we want these bonuses to work, and if we haven't calibrated them so that they will, that's a big deal. So, yeah, raised a lot of important issues, and just appreciate you and the rest of the members of this body that spend a great deal of time trying to figure this out, at least most of the way, for the five of us who have to ultimately decide it. So thank you.
Well, there's still work to be done, and we will meet with you upon request at
questions,
any time.
Concerns?
I want to, if I could, just take the liberty of having two leaders from the commission here and put you on the spot on something that has divided this council. Tomorrow is October 7th. It was the day that the council set as a deadline for entering into a contract for a temporary shelter at Terminal 1 North. That contract has not been finalized because the parties have been unable, the parties meaning Housing Bureau and the developer, have apparently been unable to come to terms. So it is still an open question. But what the council initially said, we were going to do a short-term use there, which is allowed under the state of emergency. And that short-term use could last 6 months longer, but could be as short as 6 months. The longer-term possibility that's been discussed and debated is converting prime industrial land to some other use, and in this instance, to housing. My sense about the comprehensive plan that we adopted is very carefully balanced. We already have a shortage of industrial land that's referenced in the comprehensive plan. If in the next couple of years there was a future council or action taken to try to convert prime industrial land at Terminal 1 North to, say, housing, where would we find the replacement land as to backfill the 14 acres that we'd be taking out. And given the protections that we've built in this comprehensive plan, how is it even legally possible for us to take that up?
They're excellent questions, and I know you want to weigh in, so just a second. I would just say there are questions that as we have robust discussions as well, but I would say in general we are always very supportive of protecting the industrial lands for just the reason that you were talking about. I can say personally, because this is not an item as a commission we've discussed, I would support maintaining it as industrial land and perhaps consider a temporary use for a short-term need, but that's where I would land. As far as finding other lands,
we had to find 14 acres to replace that.
There's a really robust discussion that was had regarding on West Hayden Island, which has now been kind of taken out of discussion. So there's certainly one option there. And then, of course, the other areas that we had looked at were the golf courses. And then I think it's getting, and we certainly have that targeted, but brownfield redevelopment, and it's probably getting really serious about how many more of those areas we can really kind of start pushing forward.
Probably, I would say, just my own view, we're at the point of being particularly aggressive about brownfield remediation. I mean, we can add to the inventory, but given how difficult it is to convert brownfield, what our history has been, it's pretty aggressive. Chris, you want to add anything?
I think Kat identified the three potential places to look. The only thing I would add is, first, a clarification. We don't have a shortage of industrial land. We have exactly as much as we need for Goal 9. So if we take some away, then we have a shortage. But right now, we've balanced the plan.
In the sub-district in which Terminal 1 is located, I believe there's a shortage. You're saying overall in the city, we're balanced.
We are. But it is a delicate balance. And you know, I would, having been a very vocal participant in the conversation around annexing West Hayden Island and zoning that for industrial use, you know, I would really like to try to avoid re-triggering that conversation. The only thing I would add.
Thank you.
Other questions? Steve?
Not a question, but just a heads up along the lines of the heads up the mayor gave you. I hope to engage each of you in discussions about particularly the actions on the Alphabet District in Irvington and the CM1 designation for those three areas. So, you'll be getting a call.
Okay. Fabulous.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you both.
Yep, thank you.
Look forward to more discussions. Okay, folks, we're going to be moving to testimony here again. Some of you weren't in the room when we started, but want to reiterate some things. We're going to take people in and ask you to confine your testimony to 2 minutes, just so we can hear as many people as possible. We suspect we're going to lose a quorum around in the neighborhood of 5:30 or 6. So we'll hear as many people as we can today. If you are standing by either in the Portland building or here farther down the list and you don't get heard today, you'll be scrolled up for the October 13th hearing, which is a continuation of this hearing. If you don't get everything in that you want to say today or think of something else or want to skip verbal testimony and submit testimony by writing, you can still do that. And, of course, we'll be accepting written testimony and through the closure of the hearing, which we'll figure out when that is sometime after next week. So, again, we'll try to hear as many people as we can today. And if we don't hear you, you're already on the list for next week. And in the meantime, of course, you can submit testimony in writing. I miss anything, staff, there in terms of the process?
And, Mayor, I just want to say to all of our friends that are here, we had originally hoped that this hearing would start earlier. Yes. We'd have the full day. Circumstances beyond our control have cut into that. I have an excused absence at 4 o'clock because I have to meet my son from school and take him to a soccer practice. But I regret I won't be here past 4. I will review the record, and we'll get a briefing.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's proceed, please.
The first three, please come on up, are Terry Parker, Rebecca Mode, and Tony Jordan. And they'll be followed by Alan Kessler, Keel Johnson, and Chris Rawl.
Good afternoon. Welcome, Mr. Parker. I think you're first.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Terry Parker. I'm a fourth-generation Portlander, and I'm speaking as an individual today. Regrettably, the TSP was developed under a cloud of bias discrimination. The one-sided stack deck policy expert group that helped develop the comp plan policy was assembled with an overwhelming majority of citizen members that were vetted to represent or lean towards supporting special interest alternative mode and anti-car groups, and three members for freight interests. As with nearly all PBOT citizen committees, nowhere is there a specific proportional representation for the primary financial stakeholders for TSP projects, the motorists who pay gas taxes, and other related motor vehicle fees. On Sandy Boulevard, any removal of motor vehicle lanes will increase congestion and emissions. With bidirectional weekday traffic volumes that exceed 26,500, each minute added to the average motor vehicle travel time will result in an increase of more than 440 hours of daily emissions. Any removal of on-street parking will have a negative impact on the small and minority businesses that line the street. With that said, the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association has continually opposed bike lanes on Sandy, instead favoring alternative routes be developed. Rose City Park is a working-class neighborhood. Unlike the more affluent neighborhoods of Lorehurst and Eastmoreland, the city is forcing the upzoning of nearly 20 blocks of mostly affordable R5 single-family homes near the light rail station. Meetings with homeowners have suggested alternatives that now appear to have been ignored. At 51st and Sandy, a developer with the reputation of a villain wants to build an 89-unit, six-story apartment building with only 19 parking places. The area already has a tight supply of parking given the city's own studies. Where are the other 45 cars that tenants will have going to be stored when not in use? Implementation of what the city is pushing will be detrimental to the livability of my neighborhood. This has prompted strong feelings by many homeowners that the city doesn't care about them. All too often, working through the system as it now exists only restores less than marginal results. So instead of ramming through the status quo, PBOT and PSC edicts, what will it take for motorists and neighborhood associations to receive priority attention for a positive decree of resolution? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. I strongly oppose the Portland City.
Oh, just put your name in first, Rebecca. Thing.
Rebecca Mode.
Yes, thank you.
That whole thing can be pushed closer to you so we can hear you. The whole thing moves.
The whole thing. This way.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Tech, but it works.
Okay. I strongly oppose the Portland City Council adopting the PSC recommended zoning map and zoning code changes for my property at 506 Northeast Thompson Street, Portland, Oregon 97212. This downzoning of my property from R2 to R25 is inappropriate for my lot of 9,375 square feet. The current R2 zoning allows this property to add more units on the existing lot with the existing duplex. If this property changes to R25, the most that can be built without lot division and therefore tax reassessment would be an ADU. This could only happen if duplexes are allowed in ADU as proposed in the residential infill project. This downzoning violates Amendment P45, encourage and enable middle housing. Downzoning will add more costs due to lot division, tax reassessment from the lot division, thus making it too expensive for a homeowner to add housing on their existing lot. The LA Land Use Committee initiated this proposal with the assumption that everyone who wished to add housing to their property wanted to demolish their existing dwelling. Simply not true and creates huge financial burden to anyone wanting to add housing and keep their existing home on larger lots such as my own. I also want to see the historic character of Elliott preserved. I don't agree with the one-size-fits-all downzoning is the best way to attempt to deter home demolition. Elliott neighborhood consists of many varying lot sizes that should be looked at individually when considering downzoning. The financial hardships of this proposal to individual property owners affected were not presented. Some Elliott residents were allowed to be removed from this proposal, even though they are also in the Elliott Conservation District. This is inequitable. My lot is perfect for keeping R2. It's large, close to public transit, parks, grocery stores, everything many residents value living in Portland. Downzoning this property takes so many great possibilities out of its future.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, my name is Tony Jordan. I'm here on behalf of Portlanders for Parking Reform. We encourage council to trade parking requirements for more affordable housing by eliminating minimum parking requirements in the mixed-use zones. We ask council members to propose an amendment to allow new mixed-use developments to be built without off-street parking. The Obama administration recently released a housing development toolkit, which argues that, quote, parking requirements have a disproportionate impact on housing for low-income households, because these families tend to own fewer vehicles, but are nonetheless burdened by the extra cost of parking's inclusion in the development. The significant cost of developing parking, from $5,000 to $60,000 per space, is incorporated at the start of the project, which can impede the viability and affordability of the construction. Portland's current requirements not only make housing more expensive, but also harder to find. Hundreds of homes may not have been built since 2013 as parking thresholds distort the cost-benefit calculations for new apartment buildings. These requirements will undercut the effectiveness of incentives for affordable housing and any eventual inclusionary zoning rules. Furthermore, BPS modeling revealed that additional required parking may limit utilization of the affordable housing bonus due to high cost of providing structured or underground parking. As most Portlanders can testify, off-street parking minimums also fail in their attempted goal of making curbside parking convenient. We can require developers to build garages, but we cannot require people to pay to park in them. The only way to make curbside parking more convenient in a busy neighborhood is to charge more for it. If the city prices its permits and meters properly, developers will be forced to build, forced to provide adequate but not excessive off-street parking, as the comp plan asks, in new buildings without the city having to guess what that level is. Trade parking requirements for more affordable housing in Portland, eliminate minimum parking requirements in mixed-use zones. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Alan Kessler, Keel Johnson, and Chris Rawl. And they'll be followed by Charlie Tso, Joseph Schaefer, and Michael Robinson.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Kessler. I'm a member of the Richmond Neighborhood Association Board, although I've been speaking for myself today. I was here to testify when the council was considering adding a parking minimum to the Northwest District. And there was a really compelling argument at the time that there's this inequity, there's this unfairness that the Northwest has this tool that the rest of the city doesn't have. But I think the council made the right choice. They realized that this tool is the last go-to tool in a stack of really great tools for parking and decided to postpone this and use some of the better tools to alleviate parking there. Well, now we have the chance to fix the whole city. As part of the mixed-use zone, we can undo the damage we did in 2013, and we can give the other tool set that we're going to give to the Northwest to the whole city. So I think that argument is really compelling. The rest of the city should not be burdened by bad policy if the Northwest isn't so burdened. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Kyle Johnson, and 4 years ago, I came up with the idea to put bicycle parking at the bottom of the tram. At that time, the bottom of the tram was actually used as a goat field, and there are a few goats that were trimming the grass. And we came up with a plan to turn it into bicycle parking. Now, 4 years later, that's the largest bicycle parking area in North America. In the space that you could fit about 20 cars, we fit about 600 bicycles. And so it's very efficient. And my main message is whatever you build, people will use it, and that's what they'll use to get around. The Bicycle Valley has been really successful, and so a few years ago I was able to purchase a condo in the Lloyd District. And I chose a building specifically because it didn't have car parking, because I didn't want to have to pay for the maintenance and maintaining car parking since we didn't own a car. So I'm here to testify against or support eliminating parking minimums in mixed-use zones, because I think that it will increase affordable housing and better development around the city and encourage more people to use other means of transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for putting Portland on the top of another list.
Yeah, anytime.
Welcome.
Hi, Mayor Hales, members of the commission. My name is Chris Rawl. I work for a national transportation advocacy organization, but today I'm testifying as a dad. My twins turned 9 yesterday, and I've also got a 5-year-old. We're a one-car family. We live in Southeast Portland, 54th and Division. My kids go to Atkinson Neighborhood School. And the reason I'm testifying as a dad is because the decisions we're making in this comp plan are about what our city will look like in the future. What is that vision? It's a walkable city that isn't choked with traffic, where people have lots of options to get around and good housing options. And off-street parking requirements work at cross-purposes to that vision. They make housing more expensive, they incentivize car ownership, and with more cars, we get more traffic. And after all these negative impacts, parking on-street won't be any easier because we will have failed to address that issue of on-street parking directly. People will always park on-street if it's free or insanely inexpensive, whether there's off-street parking or not. Thankfully, there's lots of tools for managing on-street parking. We've only just begun to tap those tools. There are even approaches that give existing homeowners grandfathered parking rights. Let's manage on-street parking where it's an issue. Let's just deal with it directly. In 10 or 20 years, which is the amount of time that many of these decisions will substantially impact the way the city looks, my kids will be looking for their first apartment. Will there be enough housing for them or only four cars that they won't even be likely to own? Will the streets be choked with traffic because we doubled down on the suburban model, or will we have a walkable city? We can chart the right course with this plan, so please eliminate off-street parking requirements, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
The next three are Charlie Sisso, Joseph Schaefer, and Michael Robinson, and they'll be followed by Sam Noble, Margot Black, and Paul Niedergang.
Great. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Charlie Tso, and I'm here today with Portlanders for Parking Reform to ask City Council to propose an amendment removing minimum parking requirements in the mixed-use zones. Our request is supported by Policy 9.58 in the Comprehensive Plan. Parking requirements have exacerbated Portland's affordability crisis by adding significant costs to development and limiting housing supply. A recent White House report states that parking requirements generally impose an undue burden on housing development, particularly for transit-oriented or affordable housing. Indeed, since 2013, Portland has lost an untold number of homes due to parking requirements restriction on housing development. Minimum parking requirements will add more congestion onto neighborhood streets. The mixed-use zones are in many neighborhoods vibrant commercial corridors that are walkable and transit accessible. But if we build abundant parking spaces for every housing development, we're incentivizing people to bring their cars with them. If we want to grow without adding more congestion, we need to stop requiring parking and start giving people more mobility options. At the hearing on July 6th regarding parking requirements for Northwest Portland, City Council agreed that there are better parking management tools yet to be explored. Commissioner Fish reminded us that the 2013 parking mandate was only an interim solution, never meant to be the final product. But now, thanks to the hard work of PBA and BPS staff, we have more tools at our disposal, and we know the harms of parking requirements. We're at the crossroads here. We can either build a city that puts housing for people first or a city that puts storage for private automobiles first. Trade parking requirements for more affordable housing in Portland. Eliminate minimum parking requirements in mixed-use zones. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Joseph Schaefer, and I'm here on behalf of Michael Foster and Tim Ramis, who own abutting properties at 1434 and 1512 Southwest 58th. This is in Lower Sylvan. These properties are unusual in that they are zoned R20, which is for half-acre lots, even though the comprehensive plan is R2, which is essentially a townhouse style density. And we are asking for the zoning to be conformed to the comprehensive plan and changed to R2. At the Planning and Sustainability Commission, there was concern raised that if this was approved legislatively, the city might not be able to get street improvements, including a sidewalk built, that they would have more leverage if a separate zone change application was required. Apparently, the concern may be that the property owners would elect to use the new fee in lieu provision instead of paying for the sidewalks and the street improvement, in part because there are some gaps in the sidewalk in the neighborhood. However, those gaps are getting filled in rapidly. Our neighbor immediately to the south has a hearing on a 7-lot subdivision for townhouses next week, and the property at the intersection of 58th and Montgomery has also been approved for development of apartments with full frontage improvements on Southwest 58th. The property owners are happy to agree in whatever form the city would like to provide a full half-street improvement when their properties do develop. We just ask that we not be required to go through the full rezone to get to the comprehensive plan designation of R2. This is a terrific opportunity for missing middle housing, and we hope you can help us provide it more quickly and more efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of council. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm here on behalf of Richard Passantini. Richard and his family own about 30 properties in the city of Portland that are affected by the rezoning. Richard submitted a letter dated October 5th in which he asked the City Council to consider changes to 11 properties. So all I want to do is just summarize those properties. I think the letter is self-explanatory, and I don't need to go into a lot of detail given your schedule today. So the first property is at Southeast 60th and Belmont. The Planning and Sustainability Commission agreed with Richard's request and has recommended that those two properties be zoned CM2 and CM1, and we appreciate that recommendation and hope Council will follow it. The second group of three properties is zoned CM1, and we ask that it be zoned CE. The reasoning behind that request is that they're in appropriate locations for increased density. It allows more development, which in turn supports better transit, and we think it encourages more walkable neighborhoods. The second group of properties are four properties. They're in the inner city. They're proposed to be zoned CM2, and we request that they be zoned CE, and the letter explains why that's the case. The last single property is at, I want to make sure I get the right address, Southeast 12th and Belmont. It's just outside of the central city. It's proposed to be zoned CM2. We think it makes sense to have it zoned CM3. You're right across the street from the end of the central city. This property is appropriate for development, and with the different zone, you have additional height and thus additional floor area in the development. We appreciate your time, and we'll hope you consider the request that Mr. Passantini put in his letter.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
The next three are Sam Noble, Margot Black, and Paul Niedergang. And they'll be followed by John Denny, Elizabeth Moore, and Susan Whitney.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Sam Noble. I lived at Southeast 62nd at Stark in the Mount Tabor neighborhood. And I drive almost everywhere I go. And I just want you to understand that when I say that I want to speak categorically against parking minimums in the mixed-use zones and anywhere else it's relevant. I just don't think it's fair or reasonable to expect residents of new mixed-use buildings to pay more rent in order to subsidize my on-street parking. The right way to address parking shortages is by charging a fair price for parking in the right-of-way. Without the inherent costs in forcing developers to include those parking costs that they can't recoup, the city leaves plenty of room to extract other concessions from developers in exchange for the right to build. Maybe that looks like inclusionary-style subsidies. Maybe it just means that when we have a downturn, rents will go down. Don't know. That's kind of up to you guys. But as I said, I drive almost everywhere I go, and that's because there just aren't very many commercial services in my neighborhood, certainly not around 60th and Stark. And so I want to talk about the vacant lot at Southeast 60th and Belmont that you actually just heard about. I really want to see this as a CM2 building. I came to talk to you at the comp plan hearings, and so my testimony then is still relevant. I think that the density is really important to support any kind of walkable services for me. This area is like one of the very few commercially zoned areas that I can actually walk to. And since this council has not elected to provide more commercially zoned areas, particularly undeveloped ones, this one is really critical that it be developed and that it be valuable enough to be developed soon. I think that you might hear maybe from my neighborhood association that there are many good reasons why you shouldn't do this. I just want to suggest, and there's going to be more detail in my written testimony, what I want to say is that every one of those concerns can be addressed in different ways, be they a better signaling system or just some retiming. Maybe there's some concession to extract from the developer, but please don't. Please respect the PSC's recommendation for this.
And you're going to be submitting additional.
I'm going to be submitting additional written testimony.
Could you just tell me where do you park your vehicle?
In my garage, or my driveway.
So, all right, thank you.
When I drive to work, I pay for a parking permit.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Margot Black. I'm here today as a renter and a car driver to speak against anything at all that would possibly limit or more housing being built or increase the cost of more housing being built, which would, of course, be passed on to renters in the form of higher rents. So specifically, I'm here to oppose minimum parking requirements and any potential downzoning that is being considered. We know our population is growing. We shouldn't be doing anything but building more housing as quickly as possible. As a renter, I hear a lot about how if we can't afford the rent now that Portland is this cool, hip city, that we should just move. And I would say that Portland is growing up and it is becoming a bigger city, and that has come with increased rents that are typical of big cities. But it also means that it comes with increased parking and traffic situations that are usually dealt with by big cities by encouraging more public transportation and bicycle use and not facilitating on-street car parking. Big cities make room for people, not cars. And so I would say to the folks that are telling me to just move if I don't like the high rents, if there are folks who don't like being able not being able to find a parking place, they should just move as well. We need to be making room for people and not cars. I also I want to say with respect to the sort of bizarre nature of today's testimony and being escorted in, I hope that City Council will recognize, as white folks and parents like I am, that the people of color in this city who are being killed by police officers need to be heard on the police contract. And rather than suppress their voices, we should listen to their input and prioritize them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. My name is Paul Niedergang. My wife and I own and operate a small real estate investment business in urban Portland. Since 1999, we've owned and managed the mixed-use property at Southeast 50th and Hawthorne Boulevard. The property is currently zoned CS, and as the comp plan has evolved, our property was initially zoned CM2 and is now slated to be downzoned to CM1. Because of Amendment F61, sponsored by Commissioner Fritz. I'm here today to ask you to reconsider the designation and return this property to its originally proposed designation of CM2. The draft comp plan shows that the corresponding zone for CS is typically CM2, and we feel that a proposed CM1 designation not only downzones our property, but also misses an important urban design opportunity. The intersection of Southeast Hawthorne and 50th Avenue plays a special role in the urban fabric. Whether coming from the south along 50th or from the east from Mount Tabor, the intersection is a gateway to the Hawthorne District. This gateway is an important urban design element and an opportunity to create a strong sense of place and identity in the urban fabric. As an example of a gateway zoning, if you look at the comp plan Division and 50th, you'll see that all four corners of the intersection are zoned the same, creating essentially a gateway to Division up there. We feel that the easternmost entry to the Hawthorne District also deserves to be zoned in the same manner. The proposed zoning for the intersection of CM1 is unbalanced. The property is along 50th, and the west side are zoned CM2, but on the east side they're zoned CM1. And we feel that the intersection should have consistent zoning. We have no plans to take down the building, but we're concerned that if anything were to happen to the building, fire or natural disaster, and at some point we were going to rebuild the building, then we would certainly prefer to rebuild under the CM2 parameters. This corner is really kind of a keystone to the neighborhood, being at the end of Hawthorne Boulevard, and we feel that it really deserves a higher density zoning than CM1. So just by way of background, I was president of Hawthorne Boulevard Business Association for 4 years and sat on the Hawthorne Transportation Plan for 6 years. During that time, I worked with Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association to support the design and implementation of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Entry.
So I need you to go ahead and complete your testimony, but you've done a great job of giving us great written backup here for it. So.
Thanks. I just appreciate it if you would reconsider this and really review it and consider this one specific property for CM2.
Great. Thank you very much. No, this is great, and we've given us all the material we need, so that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you all.
Next three are John Denny, Elizabeth Moore and Susan Whitney. And they will be followed by Ruth Adkins, Arlene Kimura, and Tim Ramos.
Good afternoon.
John Denny with Portland Nursery, and I'm here, I guess maybe because I don't understand the whole process as well as I should, but I really feel that the intersection of 92nd and the freeway or 92nd and Division is underappreciated as a transit hub. I recently got this notice of proposed zoning map and code changes, which we participated with all of the comp plan hearings. And this indicates that the one particular tax lot on 92nd and the northwest corner of Clinton is going to go from R2 to CM2 and R2. That property is approximately 400 feet as the crow flies west of a light rail station. This zoning predates any of the light rail. It also is going to be on the new express bus from Gresham to downtown. There's good north-south bus, east-west bus, freeway ramps. And so I really think that having the R2 really under utilizes this property. Now, it is designated to be R1, but we would like to see that R1 designation on that property and our property south of Clinton get the R1 designation so that it doesn't get developed as R2. This is not property that we'll be able to use as nursery under the comp plan. So we probably will do something with that property, which would be 3 or 4 acres of residential. We would like to see it all be R1 when that happens.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Moore. I own and reside at 5706 Northeast 25th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. Today I speak for myself as a homeowner, an 18-year resident of the Concordia neighborhood area, to be impacted by the proposed comp plan. Thank you for the opportunity to address the City Council in regard to this proposed rezoning for my neighborhood. I'm here today to oppose the zoning change from R5 to R2.5 in this area of Concordia. I've attended city residential infill proposal sessions, attended the open houses, attended the Concordia Neighborhood Association meetings and the LUTC meetings. I have heard from divergent organizations, and I've concluded at this point that the intentions of the City of Portland to provide housing affordability are just that. If we daylight the word affordability in Portland, you will only find minimal opportunities to become just another renter with little security of rental costs and occupation. Where the popularity of the tear down, build too expensive homes have been rightly challenged, the urgency or, quote, moral obligation of providing houses for the influx of thousands in the form of middle housing, as one group states, has become the new embrace. I have not heard that this proposal is anything more than additional apartment rental units built with impunity in all residential R5 neighborhoods, and as such would be questionable as affordable given the extreme leeway given to property corporations to set rates and evictions. The Concordia Neighborhood Association never canvassed my neighborhood, but nonetheless made recommendations to the City Council representing the neighborhood through a letter supporting a land use that does not represent my interests, nor do I suspect the majority of my neighbors affected by this proposal. I'm concerned with families that are not building equity and stability in our Portland neighborhoods when the only choice is to be renters. I would ask that you consider the missing middle class when the obvious consequence of removal of our modest homes leave the possibility of home ownership in these neighborhoods out of the reach for middle-income families.
Thank you very much. We've got the rest of your testimony here. So
thank you very much. Yes. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Well done. Thank you. Appreciate folks have appreciate these. I mean, not everyone has to supply a letter with your testimony, but it's very helpful when you do. So, and folks, again, if you want to after this, if you just testified verbally, if you want to send us your remarks, it's very helpful to have both my notes and yours as I go back through all this. So thank you. Welcome.
My name is Susan Whitney. I live on Southeast 47th in the Richmond neighborhood. I'm opposed to the rezoning of large portions of Richmond from R5 to R2.5. supposedly the city wants to create affordable housing, a very laudable goal. In fact, what is happening in our neighborhood where there is already R25 zoning, or they manage to get a zone change or a lot line change, is that expensive housing is created. One unit, a perfectly affordable, wonderful, middle-class, old, 100-year-old bungalow is torn down, and two behemoths are built in its place,